All right, so Lance, it's really good to have you on this call here. I wanted to get in touch with you and just sort of talk. I know you have a lot of amazing information that I've heard over the years. You've been in this for, I don't know, since dirt was invented. you're one of the sort of forefathers of this whole industry. And you know,
we used to just throw dirt at women back in the old day. That's all we had.
It was a new thing then, though.
It was
brand new. I've had a couple people on, and you're definitely one of the legends. I remember whenever I was sort of studying and I was starting out in the very beginning, it was, you know, your stuff and a couple other people's stuff that were sort of standing out to everybody that everyone was looking at. And, to really, first off, it's an honor to have you on. Thank you so much for being on here with me.
Awesome, man. Great to be here. I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, I'm really good at lying, so.
Yeah, I know. I caught that, but I figured no one else would get on that. But thanks for bringing it.
I'm absolutely serious, though. Absolutely. I mean, I'm not kidding. You were one of the people that definitely stood out as being very authentic in the beginning. And I did read your stuff and a lot of the guys from your company, which your company's Pickup 101. And it's been around for a very, very long time. So again, a really big pioneer, and I really appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us about some stuff here. Because really, I guess what I really want to get out in this interview is I have a lot of guys who are on my list, and of course I give them lots of great information. They've heard a few other really awesome interviews already with some other people, and I don't normally just get in and ask straightforward questions. I like to really dig deep. And one thing I'm kind of curious about, and I have been curious about this for a long time, actually, so it's good I could ask you while I'm recording, is while you're on the spot here, is, you know, whenever you're sort of getting into this in the very beginning, I mean, let's take the time, like, back. Let's take, obviously, well before you were good with women. Let's go way before then.
Well, it's for me.
You know, yeah.
When I really got into it.
Yeah. So for me, it was the same way. Like, I was really bad. And really, really, really terrible with women. And then as I started to go, I went through a lot of phases. What was some sort of like some of the phases that you went through personally, that not necessarily that everyone else goes through, but that you had a really hard time with, that was sort of a really big thing for you to overcome at the time? Because I know that we all have these like things. Like for me, I had my own specific screw ups that I kept fucking things up over and over. So what was one of yours?
You know, no one's ever asked me that question. So awesome. And I've been doing this a long time. But, you know, I love that question. A really dangerous phase that I can remember being, and you're right, this was before college. This was like junior high, high school, is where it's the women's fault and it's the cool guys' fault. And you don't want those girls anyway. And I was stuck in that for so long. And, I think guys who are listening to this, they've reached out to you. You know, they're listening to this. So they're maybe a little bit over that phase, but I think there's some residue that kind of still remains for guys where you want to pretend like you don't want certain things or you get angry. I think for me, I got angry. That's definitely one phase that really stands out for me. Another phase that I remember really clearly is just, I guess two things kind of happened for me. One thing is I realized, and this is the clearest phase that I remember, is really getting that this actually was the most important thing in my life. And I consider that the biggest blessing for me. I mean, I learned how to do this before there was an internet, before. So there really was no resources. It was so difficult to get good at this for me because I had no cooler friends to help me. I had no, like resources like you or like my company. So, but I did get a call from my brother, and he was the guy I always looked up to. He was much older than me. He's 10 years older than me, but he was the guy that was always good with women that I knew. And he called me and let me know he was getting a divorce, and he had two kids, and I didn't see it coming. And that was when I was in college, like working my butt off, and I wanted to be an engineer. And I realized, I'm like, you know what? Like, my career is not that important compared to, not having to go through what my brother's going through right now. Like, I'd rather get laid off. I'd rather not have a good job. I'd rather, have career problems, but not have these types of problems. Because, the woman you have kids with, that's the one decision in your life that's a 50-year decision.
Right.
You are tied to that woman for 50 years. There is absolutely no decision I can think of that I will ever make in my life that is a 50-year decision other than the woman that I have kids with, or hope, or if I don't want kids, the woman that I marry and I want to partner with. So that is a huge stage for me, was realizing that. And then the next stage for me was just realizing that, oh, here's a plan and it works. And because I was in this little gray area where I was so committed. I remember not being able to sleep at night because I saw a woman in the library and I couldn't get the balls to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I remember just being so pissed at myself because I knew how important this was. And like, once you realize it's important, you think, oh, well, great, I'll solve it.
I'll solve it. Wish it was that easy.
Yeah, I mean, why not? And you know, you really believe that because you haven't tried to solve it. And it's a totally rational thing, but it's kind of like, oh yeah, I want money, I'll make $10 million, you know, yeah, let's just do it, right? It's like it takes a little bit of work, takes a little more than that. Mm-hmm. But I did read something, Dr. Richard Feynman, who passed well, I guess a couple years ago now, but I read a book, he's a famous physicist, so that's right, but I read one of his biographies, and he actually talked about some rules that he had for dating. And one of his rules was never buy a girl a drink.
Huh, that's a pretty good one for a physicist. They're
pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, it gets better, actually. His other rules were that you could date – if you dated a woman three times in a row, you could only date her for 3 months, and then you had to break up with her. If you wanted to keep dating a woman, the only way to keep dating her was to date two other women in between dates with her.
Okay, right. So you didn't get your head up your ass, basically.
Which is even better. It's even better than the don't buy her a drink rule.
Right. Well, it's even better that's coming from a physicist again. Well,
this guy was a great guy. He was more than a physicist. He was a great man in many ways.
Well, obviously.
Yeah, not just with women. I mean, the book is Surely You Must Be Joking, Dr. Feynman, which is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But keep in mind, there was no internet. There was no other resources. Those rules literally were the only thing I had.
Yeah.
To get, but here's the thing. I had a plan.
Right.
And so I think that's the next phase, where you have a plan. And if you have a plan, go for it. Try it. And if it doesn't work, that's great. Find a new plan. But there's something just so powerful about just having a plan and just believing in your coach and just believing in the advice that you've been giving and just really trying it. Because if you have any doubts about your plan, you're not really going to give it a fair shake. You got to really go for it.
Right.
So, you know, I know guys are hearing – they're you, they're hearing me, they're hearing all these other guys. Find someone you like and just really accept what they say as truth and really work it. If it doesn't work for you, just move on. Find a new coach. Find a new plan.
Right.
But just find a plan you believe in, you can get behind 100%.
You know what's interesting is that when I started learning this, the internet was here and you were out there. But I studied for about 4 years before I knew any of this stuff existed. So I was studying by myself and I didn't know anybody else. I remember the moment I realized other people were out there.
Well, yeah. I didn't find it until 2004.
Oh wow, yeah. So it was late for you too.
But I'd already kind of solved a lot of the problem for me, you know. But I was late. I found the community in 2004.
Right. Yeah. It's really similar to me. And I had psychology, and I had Zen study, which is random. But the stuff I was studying, I was actually doing kung fu full time, Shaolin kung fu.
And yeah, I was doing a lot of martial arts at the time too.
Oh, cool! Yeah, so it's
great for confidence. With
amazing,
so good.
It was really bad for me, I think, in certain ways though, because social interaction and martial arts.
You were hitting women a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I was kicking them because it was kung fu.
Yeah, you just don't want to leave bruises. That's the key, I think.
Rolled up phone book. It's all about the phone book. I know, but I, you know, I was. In Shaolin Kung Fu, it's very much a lifestyle to destroy your ego as you're going through the process. It doesn't have to be, but I was doing it 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. So it was like a full-time job. I was working at the gas station to support myself, barely, and just got enough money to pay for Kung Fu and eat and then stay in a place, like a really small place outside of town, and that's it, you know? And I was doing everything that I could just to focus and do Kung Fu. So I studied Zen a lot during the process, and this ironically led me to be able to, when I started this, it was just sort of a surprise to me. When I started this, I came from an angle of like having already broken myself down to nothing. And so I didn't have all the bullshit that I think a lot of people start out with that they have to undo, because they already undid that in Kung Fu. And then I found a book called The Modern Gentleman, which is not about dating at all. It's just about like, how to be a good, like, how to be the modern gentleman, how to be a good host and, like, you know, have some charisma. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't about women. And same thing, I took a couple of things in there. I was like, oh my God. You know, I opened up my old psychology folder and I started reading through some of the stuff in psychology and I was like, I can use this stuff, you know? And guys are being taught this in class, you know, and we're not using it. So yeah, I went through a long process too, really similar to that, where I didn't have like a guru that I could look to at the time. And then I would definitely second what you're saying. Like, yes. Only thing I would add to it is that whenever you're saying, you know, find a plan that works for you, and then just go with it 100%. I would even say that, as you see other people's plans, just take what works. Sure. And leave what doesn't, you know?
Sure.
Just like I've done that with so many things. And that's how I built my system, is that I took parts from everything that I ran into that made sense for me, and then I made my own style, because no one teaches your exact style. It's just it's who you are, right? You take parts that work for you, and then you have amazing success. So
absolutely.
That's a really good point. And I also know the same feeling of being angry. That point like really hit home for me, because I remember sitting like I learned to here's some really funny thing. I learned to dislike blonde girls, like because they're always in my face. I grew up in St. Augustine, Florida, which is a small town. But then I went to college at Florida State University, which is in Tallahassee. And it's like, you know, it was like the number one party school for Girls Gone Wild and Playboy. And it was nuts, man. Every girl there is like blonde and Florida girls, you know?
Yeah.
And I started judging them super harshly.
Yeah.
I wasn't being fair at all.
Yeah, you may imagine they're all stupid and they're all you know, shallow and insecure. I don't know. It's not true, really. It's not true at all.
No.
It's just what. But if you see that, then you kind of make that true.
Right. And that's what it was happening. Is I was walking up to women essentially and judging them immediately, and then they were reacting to being judged. They were just reacting because I was being kind of a dick, you know. And then I would just use that to serve as
a whole.
Good.
Yeah, there's that whole term that is in the community, the bitch shield, which is just so. I just think that's kind of a very manipulative term to kind of turn men's anger into sales, basically.
Yeah.
I think it's what that does.
Yeah.
But the truth is, it really doesn't exist, and it drives me crazy when people talk about it, because the talking about it is what makes it actually a real thing for guys, because they believe it exists. And if you believe it exists, well, then of course it does.
But of course, it's kind of like the media effect, you know?
Yeah.
And then, oh, the stock market's going to drop tomorrow, and then everyone sells, you know?
Yeah.
So, and that is, you know, I saw that firsthand. And what I eventually came to realize is that we essentially attract women who have the same insecurity levels as us. And we try to keep women who we feel are out of our league, we try to keep them out of our options so that we don't have to face that, essentially.
Especially long term. And what's so painful about that is when guys learn little tricks to get women who are at different levels than them, but then they can't keep them around.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because there are little windows of opportunity where you know people don't really know who you are. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, it's so horrible when you talk to a guy and he landed the perfect girl, but he wasn't quite what he was presenting himself to be. And
right. Well, I think that at the end of the day, the part of the interaction that is, and I can't believe that we even tried to go here with this, but the part that's most important for authenticity is when you're building that rapport, you know, you're making that emotional connection with the woman. You're like really there with her. And guys fake this. The funny thing is that if you fake it, it doesn't work long term. But if you don't fake it, it works. Even if you're just being who you really are, and that's nerdy, doesn't matter. All the heavy lifting is done. Like all the parts where you're sort of being playful and fun, you know, are you're through that. She's curious about you. She wants to know more. She's sitting down with you. She's talking to you about real shit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then guys just lie. And what ends up happening is that just sets a time bomb on your relationship, on your interaction. And so we self-sabotage that process often, you know, and then we start to believe that we like it. You know, guys will start to believe that they like to manipulate women or something, you know, and I think that's just really bred from this fear of being able to be open and not being ridiculed, you know, during the process. So I don't know. Whenever I went through the stage where I was starting to understand rapport more, I had really had a weird feeling of knowing what I was doing while I was doing it, because it was such an authentic, real thing for me to build a connection. I didn't want to fuck it up, essentially, you know? And so whenever I did, I ended up just finding a way to reveal myself to people that was really specific. And I'm sure that you went through, you know, really specific and real for me. It wasn't like I didn't feel scared anymore, but it was really hard for me to get to that point. You know, I think I can see why guys would fall victim to sort of the temptation to never put themselves out there fully.
Well, I think a lot of guys, first of all, I think no guy really wants to lie to women. And mm-hmm. No guy wants to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, guys want to be themselves. I think they get that. And I think guys have trouble connecting with women because one of the issues is they have trouble connecting with different parts of themselves. Mm-hmm. You know, how can you connect with a woman's vulnerability if you can't actually look inside and admit the areas where you feel insecure?
Right.
You know, how can you connect with a woman's passion if you can't really connect with things in life that you're passionate about?
Right.
And you know, you can say that for all the emotions, and that's one of the things we really try and develop in people is, you know, telling stories about their own the things they're passionate about, or the things that are profound to them, or the things that made such a key difference for them, you know, from their childhood, and just mm-hmm. really learning to, like, we call those deep rapport stories or connection stories. We have different ways of looking at it, but mm-hmm. the point isn't so much to convey something about yourself to women. I mean, there's all those cheesy stories that I think some guys are teaching where it's like, tell the story and she'll think you're rich, or tell the story and she'll think, you know, you date Playboy models, or tell, you know, and that's not really the goal, because women really, they don't care if you're rich. They don't care, you know, the women that I want, I think, don't care about those things so much. What they really care about is, how do you make them feel? If they're feeling a certain way, can you be inside that space with them? And so when you're trying to tell a story and share yourself and learn more about another woman, the point of the story is to get you, your body, to feel something.
Right.
Because if you can feel excited about something, or if you can actually feel vulnerable, or if you can feel intimate, or if you can feel like you really just shared something mm-hmm. and you're really in that state physically, she will go in that same state with you. She'll follow you into that emotional state. And then that's where she can kind of share unique things. And my goal in talking to a woman is very simple. I want her to share things with me in like a 10, 15, 20 minute conversation that she hasn't shared with her last boyfriend.
Right.
That's my goal. And some people hear that goal and they think it's impossible, but the truth is, it's actually shocking how easy it is to do that, and how you can just do that almost every conversation you have. You can get women to say things, reveal things, share things that their last boyfriend was not interested in.
Right.
Because their last boyfriend was ashamed by his own vulnerability, or he was resistant to the things he was passionate about because it was too scary for him, or
right.
whatever other emotional block he had. I think, you know, you want to free those areas in yourself, and you want to make those areas available to women.
And I think that, first off, that's right on. And I think the biggest shock in that statement that you, or that whole, that, story in that explanation you just gave, is that I heard you say something I had never heard anyone ever say before, which I totally agree with, but I just didn't think it was on anybody's radar. And that is, the only true way to get a woman to feel anything is to feel something yourself first, and then they follow you in. So it becomes less about trying to get her to do something, you know, and that, of course, will create neediness if you try to do it. You'll come across as really needy and outcome dependent if you try to do that. So it becomes more about, you know, diving into yourself to reveal things that maybe you haven't really talked about in a long time. You know, maybe it's something that, maybe it's something that you talked about a few times, or maybe not. You know, I remember the first time I really started telling people the most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me, right? So this is something that we typically won't even tell our friends, you know, unless we're drunk or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I got used to just expressing it to people I'd never met before. And when you do that, the response from the people that you talk to is amazing. I mean, they feel so compelled immediately to tell you things that they've never told anybody. You know, and I don't think that I wouldn't do it with the goal of getting them to open up at all, because, you know, at the end of the day, first off, it's not going to work if that's your goal, because people will pick up on that, and people aren't stupid, especially women. They're not dumb, and they're really, really intuitive.
Yeah.
So you can't really do that, and I wouldn't suggest it. But at the same time, I would suggest that if you focus on sort of revealing that embarrassing moment, let's say. For example, I'll tell you probably the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to me, but this is skewed because I was a kid when it happened. So it's not that embarrassing if I look back on it. But I was a kid, so it was like the end of the world to me, you know? Okay. I was in second grade in the lunchroom, and I had, you know, those, they had milk cartons when we were little. I'm not sure.
Yeah, yeah. I remember those.
Now they have like milk bags or something. If they even have them anymore, I don't know.
That's
but
horrible.
Yes.
Yeah.
but they used to have
Isn't
milk cartons.
Isn't that called an udder? That's an udder.
I think that is an udder. It's got a nipple on the outside.
A cow attached to it.
It's straight from the source. But yeah, so they used to have, you know, of course, milk cartons, and you go and you open your milk carton, and they had these milk cartons, and you get to choose, you know. They'd have regular milk, which no kid got, and they had chocolate milk, which every kid got, because that's fucking a no-brainer for a kid, you know?
Yeah.
So I got chocolate milk, and if you don't shake it, of course, then you don't it tastes like regular milk, you know? So I open it up. I'm not thinking I'm talking to somebody at my table, and I take a drink, and I'm like, ugh. This tastes like regular milk. And I look at the carton, and it's chocolate. It's like, oh, I haven't shaken it yet, you know?
Oh, I can see that.
So I'm talking to somebody. I forget what I'm doing, and I start shaking my fucking chocolate milk. And it's open, and I shake it all over myself. Just like – I shake it probably 3 or 4 times in the middle of a conversation before I realize that my friend's staring at me like I'm nuts, you know, and that I'm covered in chocolate milk. I just am not paying attention. So – he starts laughing. Everyone else sees me. They start laughing. It's like the whole lunchroom is laughing at me, you know? And I've got chocolate milk all over me. I got a white shirt on. And I start running. I start crying immediately in second grade, you know? I start running through the halls. And then I get lost in the school because I've never been in the hallway by myself before, you know? And no one's there. So I end up just sitting in a corner just like absolutely freaked out as a kid covered in chocolate milk until one of the teachers found me. And brought me into the office, and I had to get my mom to come in and talk to me, and you know, get a shirt changed, and then I went to class after that, and everything was fine, you know. But it was like the most embarrassing moment of my life when I was a kid. And so the funny thing about that's a true story. And the funny thing about that story is that I didn't tell it to anyone, not a single person, until I was probably 25.
Wow.
Didn't tell anybody because I don't know. I just thought people were going to judge me whenever I did it. And whenever I started really trying to be uncomfortable, that was the story that came out as my most embarrassing story. And when I started telling women, especially groups of people all at once, it was just like, it was like I found the Holy Grail, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
People were so engaged. So I just, you know, to me, that was something that you can't fake and you can't get around, you know?
Yeah, and why would you? I mean, everybody's got a story like that. And what's so great about that story, and there are two things that you said. First of all, one thing you said is that you don't tell that story to get people to open up, like to right. share their own stuff. But mm-hmm. the truth is, just by listening to that story, I'm opening up.
Right, yeah.
I mean, just by being there and being there with the story, mm-hmm. you know, you can't help but really listen to that and put yourself in that situation without kind of opening up to you in some way. It's just not really – how human physiology works, you know?
Right.
And the other thing that's so cool about it is, cause usually, you know, embarrassing stories are supposed to be really funny and guys tell them they're trying to get a huge laugh and stuff. But the part that sticks to me is that whole part of that little kid not realizing he doesn't know where to go in the hallway.
Like, yeah.
And that's such a vulnerability and just such a kind of honest
yeah,
and I hear that story, and it's like, how could – it's so funny that you, for so many years of your life, were worried people would judge you for that story. But mm-hmm. as I hear it, and I'm sure for every guy listening, mm-hmm. I'm sure as everyone hears that story, they're like, there's no way anyone could judge you for that story. But yet I totally believe that you felt that way.
Yep.
And the truth is that's the way it is for every guy out there. Because we do – I mean, one of our workshops is Art of Rapport is the name mm-hmm. of the workshop. Mm-hmm. And it's – we go super deep into vulnerability stories. I mean, people are crying. I mean, it's really a big deal because it's about how to build really deep connection with women.
Right.
And everyone is horrified of being judged. And I have never seen anyone ever judged by anyone
right.
for telling an honest, true story. And they can get – I mean, that's such a great story, but you can also get so much deeper with that. And I'm sure even that story, you could tell that story with a lot more of a like getting yourself into what it's really like to be lost as a kid, or like, you could tell that in a much deeper way and get even more of a, you know, a connection, I guess.
You know, what's great is that, you know, looking back on it, it's a really super vivid memory for me. I don't have too many of those when I was a kid. I have a really bad memory in general. But it's a super, super vivid one for me. And going back, as I'm telling the story, I remember how scared I was in the hallway. It like makes me a little bit nervous to remember.
It makes me nervous. just hearing you tell it for the first time. I mean, and you know what's funny? Here's mine. I've never told this. I've never told this. Not because it never occurred to you. I tell a lot of. I do that, but I do it more. My life now, like where I am in my life now, and I use metaphors, and it's all kind of just off the hip. And I remember being in third grade, and there was this girl named Mary, and I used to always harass her. I basically would always propose to her constantly in the third grade, but I did it in an obnoxious way. And looking back, I can say that was my way of maybe dealing with like this anger. I mean, it probably hadn't been fully developed, but that was my way of facing the fear of her. I mean, I guess in the third grade, you could say she was the hottest girl in the third grade. I guess you could say.
It was a little weird to say that now.
The anger was I would constantly harass her, and I would constantly propose to her. And one day at like the end of the day, it was towards the end of the day, she pushed me back into a coat rack. You know those little coat racks, little metal hooks?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And my head, I guess, snapped back, and I hit the coat rack. And I still have a scar on my forehead.
Oh, my God. Wow.
I still, to this day, have a scar. And get this, after, you know, I was in the doctor's. I mean, it wasn't a big deal. It was like, you know, it was like 4 stitches. It wasn't a big deal. Right. But it bled a lot. Head wounds bleed. I mean, it was bleeding. And she came in the nurse's office, and she was so sorry, and it was like the moment I had with her was so weird. It was like, I don't know how that must have screwed me up. It's like, you know, think about the programming that does to a kid.
Yeah, right.
If you want attention from the cute woman, you have to
bleed.
Be physically injured by her. Maybe that's why I had trouble in high school. I figured it out.
That's amazing. It's funny. So all these other stories are coming up to me right now. And I was thinking when I was in first grade. This was first grade. I had something similar where I had a girl in class who was like the hottest girl in first grade. Again, like that's kind of weird for me to say that, but she was there. And her friend liked me, I think. And she was like the second cutest girl in class. But I didn't care. Like I wanted the other one, you know?
Yeah.
And one day I drew a picture for her and I gave it to her and she dropped it on the floor and didn't care.
Oh, man.
and so I was in class and
did she do it like in a way that was she aware that you noticed?
Oh yeah. She was standing right in front of me.
Just did it on purpose.
Yeah. She wasn't like, I don't think she was like, that malicious, you know, I think she just didn't care that I drew it. It was like, oh, well, okay, cool. You know, didn't really care at all. And it just, all these things went through my head. That was like probably the first time I realized that I wasn't one of the cool kids in class. And, I went back into class. We sat down. This was at recess. I gave her the picture at recess and went back into class and I sat down and the teacher's talking and I'm writing over and over and over again on this piece of paper. I think her name was Jennifer at the time. That's the girl's name. I was writing, I hate Jennifer. And I was writing it over and over again, like, you know, little kid handwriting on this like wide ruled paper, you know, with a giant pencil because I was in first grade.
Oh,
and I was writing this and the teacher came over and saw it, you know, and snatched it out from where I was writing and then ripped it up and looked at me like I was the most horrible being in the universe, you know. So then I had like this like, well, the teacher doesn't like me. She thinks I'm stupid. You know, and the cool kids don't like me. They think I'm stupid. And that carried with me all the way through high school, where I didn't feel like I was part of the cool kids. And every time I got close to the cool kids, I always felt like, and this is funny, I didn't realize till right now that this was a connection I made. I always felt like I was, it was just a matter of time before people revealed a joke, you know? like the joke was on me, and I was going to be, shunned, and no one's going to like me,
But you know what? And I'm sure the guys listening have. I'm sure guys listening are coming up with their own stories. Here's the thing, man. Mm-hmm. The guys with those stories are the guys that rule the earth when we grow up and become adults. And it's true. I mean, if we've all had those stories, but I think it's formed us. You know, it's like you've been on this whole journey of self-discovery, partly because of that. You know, I have as well, and I know guys who are listening to this are on that same journey. And I think, you know, if you were the high school quarterback, maybe you were the high school quarterback and you want to get better and you're listening to this. But if you weren't, you know, maybe that's the drive. And maybe that's, you know, people have had a lot of success from that. And I think it's good to go through those phases. And I think that's why people connect with these stories.
Right.
Because I think you trust someone. You trust people who've been through the hero's journey.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily trust people that just, you know, inherited their daddy's money and now he wants to start a company. You don't really know. You don't really know what that is. It could be great. It could not.
Right.
But if you see someone who's scrapped and worked their way up and, you know, been selling things out of their car and now they're, you know, now they've started something,
mm-hmm.
like you can trust that. And so I think that's part of why those stories are so powerful, because it shows that you're the real deal and shows that you really are what you present. And you've really earned what you have in life.
Right. I really think that that's like, I mean, this is such a secret sauce for us as men. And I think that so few guys are able to do it in the first place. And they're not, I mean, everyone's able to do it. Definitely. So few guys are willing to take that leap. And I think that I didn't realize it was even a good thing. I thought it was going to be a bad thing whenever I did it the first time, but the response I got was amazing. And that sort of helped me to realize that there's something else going on here.
Can I tell you about the coolest thing I've ever done on stage ever?
Yeah.
We do these deep rapport stories in Art of Rapport, and we kind of rotate them. You know, it's kind of like almost one of the rites of passage if you want to be an instructor for Pickup 101. You know, you have to really – because telling us – and these are stories that actually like these are the kind of stories or maybe the depth of connection to the emotion of the story is such that like you start crying.
Right.
And it's not a manipulation. It's really just an openness to share that emotion with the person in the room. And of course, the reason we're teaching it is because you want to share that with the woman who's in the room so that she knows. It just opens up all kinds of things when there's that level of intimacy between you and a woman. But it's one thing to be able to do that with a woman on a date, you know, and it's another thing to do that in a room full of 20 guys or 10 guys or whatever. But we did a workshop with, I think there were 130 people there. And I got up on stage and I told like my deep rapport story, and I really went into it. I mean, it's a really, you know, it's about my dog that I grew up with and how he died. And it's just, and like what that relationship meant to me and like what he went through in his life. And I mean, it's just, I'm tearing up just even giving you the outline of the story.
Yeah.
But I told that story for like 20 minutes and everybody, like, I mean, we've got it on tape. Like everyone's like 130 guys, just everybody's bawling and crying and everybody wants to get up and tell their story. And I mean, it's just so, obviously that's not the goal is to get
right.
But I tell you, I could have had any guy in that room. I'm not kidding, Joshua, any guy. I could have picked him. You're my guy. We're going home. No, but I mean, it's just so liberating. And that really was like the coolest thing. And guys still who were at that event still come up to me and be like, that was the coolest thing, man. It was so cool for me. And I wasn't the only one that did it. We had other instructors do it. It was just so cool to just be that comfortable with like your vulnerability.
You know, I think that also, you know, you're at a unique position. I mean, there are literally tens, if not hundreds and hundreds of thousands of men who look up to you on a daily basis, you know, who look to what you say and look to what you do and model what you've taught and learn off of what you've developed as a man. And to be in a place where you can stand in front of these people and teach them something that I would say 99% of men will never know, which is that it's okay to be this way, because we're all secretly that way. We all secretly have these stories, you know, secretly have these things that happened to us or that we went through. Not all bad, of course, you know, it could be very, very positive things, But we all have these things, and just to feel like, hey, you know, it's all right. That's a gift that I think it's a very special person that can give that gift. And I think that I'm just really happy that you pioneered that, and you're pioneering that movement and sort of men, and because you have the opportunity to tell them whatever you want to. I mean, you could stand up there and go, hey guys, all right, so go out and get laid and who cares, right? You could say that, and some guys would go, that's weird that Lance is doing that, but some guys would go, okay, and they would do it, you know? So I think that when you have that kind of responsibility and you are standing in front of these, which that's why I wanted you on this call, because, you know, whenever you do stand in front of those people and you have that moment to talk to the world, what are you going to say, you know? And I think that that you actually did that is, I don't know, I just think that you're one of the good guys, man. There are a lot of bozos in the world that teach us, and I think that you're one of the good ones.
Well, I mean, I absolutely appreciate that. I'm so humbled by everything that you just said. But really, I teach it because it works. You know, I mean, it's really what's worked for me. Right. You know, really, absolutely. And that's why I teach it. And you know, who knows what would happen if there was if I'd had some magic, you know, pheromone spray, you know, like, then maybe I'd be in this world of temptation where I could go down the path of good or evil or whatever. But I mean, there really isn't anything there's obviously other things I teach, you know, that work for different stages and stuff. But in terms of really building connection with women, that absolutely is what works. And, you know, I think a lot of guys kind of get it, I think. And even when they get it, they think they have to wait. Mm-hmm. And I just want to share, I guess, since we're talking so much about this one area. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is where I go when someone asks me, what do you do?
Right.
Which happens after 20 seconds of flirting or whatever. Mm-hmm. You flirt with a woman for 20 seconds or 30 seconds, or you flirt with her and her friends for a minute. They know you can do that forever, especially if you're really good at it. Mm-hmm. They get that you can just flirt and flirt and flirt. But as soon as they ask me a real question, you know, I mean, I guess I could go into the story of the girl pushing me the coat rack if I wanted, or I could go with where my business is right now, or I could go with, I had this great call with, you know, this great conversation with Joshua today and just totally made me think of my childhood. But I would go somewhere real, and I go there very quickly. Mm-hmm. And guys should try it. That's all they need.
Right. You know, I think that as being in a place where I was sort of like a deer in headlights whenever this happened to me in the beginning, because I think a lot of guys think their biggest problem is with, like, if I can just get a girl's number, if I can just get a girl to, if I can just flirt with her, if I can get her to laugh, like, these are things that we think are our biggest problems. So, you know, when it comes time for rapport, I'm just like every other guy for the most part. I was like, what the hell do I do now? You know, she's asking about who I am. Do I keep joking around? You know? So I went through that process of realizing, obviously I don't joke around. I got to be real and I got to go deeper. And then, you know, again, like, you know, I look back on the things that I see other people doing, and it's such crap. We have such crap conversations as people. You know, how are you doing? Oh, pretty good. How are you? Oh, you know, pretty good. How's the family? Oh, you know, they're all right. You know, going on vacation this week. Oh, great. You know, it's just complete bullshit conversations all day long, you know? And they're really, it's like an emotional game of chicken. What we're just saying.
It's comfortable. It's comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. So we want people to open up first, you know? And, I just think that's, and so you had an entire class, you said, on rapport. And I built a class on rapport too, that I had taught for a while. It was 5 days, which is a long, long time. The class was 5 days long.
Yeah.
And I remember writing that curriculum, and that was probably my most advanced curriculum, because it's a really advanced topic. Guys don't know that, but the only guys who ask about rapport are the guys who already have some of the bells and whistles down, the flirting part.
Yeah, you know? They can flirt, they can get girls to laugh, yeah.
Right. So it's a more of an advanced kind of bit of material, but that's cool that you have an entire program devoted to it, because I think a lot of coaches don't go there because they just don't see that there's a need for it or a desire for it. But I think it's great that you're serving that up, because almost no one is, you know? I think almost no one can as well. So do you also have any products around Art of Rapport?
We do. We do. Real World Rapport is our big product on Rapport.
Right.
It all focuses on day game, you know, how to meet women during the day, how to build connections with them right away.
Right.
How to do really intense, intense direct approaches that already kind of you're just meeting a woman and already you're coming at her with like this vulnerability intensity, right, which is super powerful. And that's actually how I really – that's the first thing that I figured out that worked for me. And that was really pretty much the only thing I did for probably 6 years, I think, from like probably, yeah, 92 or whatever to like 2000 somewhere.
Huh.
In 2000s, I would just approach women in a very direct, like hard on my sleeve, mm-hmm, really powerful way. But I got really good at it because it was the only thing I knew how to do. And it was the only plan that ever worked for me. And I got really good at it. And it's still the most powerful way to meet women. As long as you're, you know, as long as you're in a quiet place where she can hear you and she can focus on the subtleties of the interaction.
Right.
We talk about that. Super, super powerful way to meet women.
So you've got that program, but if you know, you have a lot of stuff. I mean, you've been doing this forever, you know. I'm kind of curious.
And now, I'll be honest with you too. Sure. That's not a bestseller because, you know, guys, they don't understand how important rapport is until they get the other stuff down, which
right.
I totally get. Right?
Totally.
If you can't start a conversation, you can't get that first laugh, that probably should be your priority. Now, I want to tell you something really cool,
mm-hmm,
that I'm actually super excited about now.
Cool.
And it's something that I just kind of started talking about. It's kind of new, a test, I guess. It's not a test in terms of the content, but I've never really tried to sell this before. It's something that I've been working on for a long time. And basically, it all starts with the story of how I accidentally scored with a super hot woman.
Mm-hmm.
And this was back in college. This was back in my days of knowing nothing. And this girl, mm-hmm, was amazing. It was like a this is at UC Davis, so we didn't have like a top tier gymnast, but she was like one of the best gymnasts,
mm-hmm,
at UC Davis. Super hot.
Right.
And the super cool thing is, I didn't approach her. She asked me about stuff that we had in common, and she asked me out.
Wow.
And it was all an accident. And people hear that story and they think it's impossible. But I've actually been using it a lot, and my instructors have been using it, and we've got a test group now. We've had about 160, not quite 160 guys go through it. We're already getting tons of testimonials.
Hmm.
And I've got a video on it.
Oh, cool, man. That's great. Yeah, can we have a link to it? That'd be awesome.
Yeah, I'll put up a link. I'll tell you what, I'll put up a link at just pickup101.com. That's PICKUP. And then the numbers 101.com/Josh, and we'll just put the video up. And I kind of go into it's kind of a long conversation. It's a long video actually, so I'll warn guys.
Carve out some time to watch it, definitely.
Yeah, it's not like an hour. It's probably like a half hour, but I really talk about why it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll just refer guys to the videos. But actually, that's what I'm super excited about because. But watch that first, and then use that. And basically, what'll happen is you'll find that starting conversations with women is no problem.
Mm-hmm.
Getting to laugh is no problem. Getting dates even is no problem. But you'll still want the rapport that we're talking about too. So
right. Well, I mean, I think that's it's good to meet people where they're at first, you know.
Yeah.
And that's
and
awesome.
That stuff's so fun. I mean, I love giving guys stuff. Here's what I love the most now. I love, mm-hmm, giving guys things they can use like right away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think hopefully if guys are listening, they can just tell. I mean, I love your spin on the most embarrassing story. I'll tell you something too, Josh, because mm-hmm, I usually hate when guys are like, yeah, I go up to women and tell them my most embarrassing story, because usually when guys do that, and you did something brilliant with it, but usually when guys do that, they're trying to get a laugh.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is great to get one laugh, but you don't want to get a whole story's worth of laughs, because then you're just the guy that's what you do. You make people laugh.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I love how you engage people, but then you got me to really – I was there in that hallway with you.
Right.
And that's what's powerful about that story. And I love that spin. And, you know, I think I'm probably going to go out and tell my embarrassing stories now because I love that angle on it.
Well, I mean, it was the most, you know, for me, it was one of the biggest revelations that I had. And it was one of the most effective things I'd ever done. And it was the most freeing thing I'd ever done. I felt so connected to people after that. And I think that if I challenge any guy, and I think you would do the same, I challenge any guy who's listening to this, that feels sort of a deep-seated, sort of deep-down resentment for either people or women. Just like, you know, it's in your head, like, well, you know, maybe you're upset about women for whatever reason. Like, you know, I was upset because I couldn't get the ones that I wanted and feel like they liked me. The world wasn't fair, basically. And that really bothered me. And I challenge you to try this with people you've never met before. And just say it. Just like, just say it in a way. It's like, let me tell you something that happened to me a long time ago. I never really told anybody about. It's embarrassing, but I'll tell you. And then just launch into it. And then don't expect anything back. Just say it to say it. And I just challenge you to do it because I think it'll turn you around as a man. I think it'll completely turn you from resent or feeling unwanted or like you don't fit in or unlike to realizing that we're all in this. You know, we all go through the same crap. And that is a huge realization for rapport. You know, and as well, like you're saying, when you walk up to a girl for the first time and you have that sort of intro moment where you're talking to her and you're making the sort of interaction in the very, very beginning, if you have those hesitations to reveal things, you know, if you don't have that willingness to go further, she's going to turn away at some point, you know? So I definitely like the, I think it's cool that you have a video, by the way, on how to get, you know, how to do what you did where she asked you out and, you know, she basically pushes everything forward.
It's nothing like the reason I'm excited about it. I mean, I was really excited about because the Sorry Report was the first day game workshop, but that was in 2005. It was the first day game workshop, you know.
Right.
And then we came out with our rapport product, and it was like I really think it was the first product that really went into this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, now you're doing it. I'm sure other guys are doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, no, I'm kidding, man. But seriously,
we're all stealing
it's not. I mean, it's super powerful.
Right.
Not to take anything away from it, but it's not like brand new. And this is right. I feel like kind of. The new thing I'm super excited about.
Right, cutting edge stuff.
Yeah, for me.
Cool. So. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with our guys. I'm sure they'll really appreciate it, and they'll check it out. I mean, I'll watch it too, obviously, as soon as you get that link up.
Yeah, pickup 101.com/Josh. And, you know, we're doing a webinar next week too. I'll let you know about that when that comes up.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I'll email everyone and let them know so they can join, and I'll be on it too. And I'll be the heckler. I'll heckle you from the
awesome,
stands.
Awesome, man. Bring it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so awesome, much, man. Lance. This was such a treat for me, and I really appreciate it. I love being able to go deep like this and really get to the real shit here because, you know, like I was saying, there's if a guy's on this call and he hasn't heard of you yet, when he goes out and he starts researching you, he's going to find, you know, he's going to find out that you've been doing this for a very long time and you're one of the top players that have ever existed in this. So it's really good to get down to the core of who you are, and it's really clear to me, and I think to everyone who's listening right now, why it is you got so good and why it is that people do follow you, you know? So I really appreciate you being willing to go there with me and spend this time with me. Thank you very much for that.
It's been a lot of fun, Joshua. Thanks.
Awesome, man. I'll talk to you soon. I'll let everybody know as soon as you get that webinar together.
Awesome, man.
All right. Take care.
Cheers.